Shortly after the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision legalizing abortion, the early pioneers of the pro-life movement put forth a strategy: demonstrate the humanity of the unborn child, raise abortion's ugly head for all to see, showing the broken and dismembered bodies, and America would soundly reject abortion. But abortion activists countered that with market research, opinion polls, media sound bites, and print advertising. Education of the masses took a contemporary twist. With the help of a sympathetic press, the pro-abortion movement began to infect American culture with researched phrases through massive media buys. Abortionists changed the focus of the debate from the tiny victim being killed to a question of women's rights, of who decides. With this, there developed a change in public opinion that would both condemn abortion but still allow it as a woman's right. Recently, the grisly evil of abortion has again been thrust to the forefront of the American conscience through the release of the unedited videos from the Center for Medical Progress. Can righteousness prevail this time? Can the barbarity of human body parts trafficking be stopped, and with it the entire abortion industry be brought down? Stay tuned for my conversation with Brad Mattis next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
It's called the American Dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends, and thanks for tuning in to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and ask that when you do, if you'd leave a review and a rating, that helps us. You can follow us on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad and on Facebook to discuss this episode. My guest today is Brad Mattis. He is a 2-time Emmy Award-winning host and executive producer of Facing Life Head On, which airs in over 100 million homes in the United States and Canada. An internationally acclaimed presenter with a genuine interest in and compassion for people, Brad also serves as executive director and co-founder of Life Issues Institute, an educational organization globally headquartered in Cincinnati, Ohio. In addition, Brad hosts Life Issues, a daily radio commentary broadcast on over 1,100 radio outlets throughout the United States. With over 35 years of educational, political, and humanitarian experience, he has chaired several nonprofit organizations and continues to collaborate with international leaders to establish solid policies and programs that further protect the health and lives of innocent human life. Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Brad.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's really pleasant to be with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. Brad, you've been involved with the pro-life movement for many years, most of your adult life, I would say. Would you tell our listeners how you became focused and zeroed in on the pro-life movement?
Well, Mike, you hit it on the nail. I've been involved with the pro-life movement all of my adult life. My senior year in high school, at the age of 18, I chose abortion as the subject of a persuasive speech in high school, my senior year.
Wow.
And I went to a woman's house who was involved with a group called Right to Life, and she gave me a slide set called the Wilkie Slide Set, a handbook on abortion written by the same people, and some various brochures that they had also written. Well, I took a poll of the class before I gave my speech, and it was about 50-50 on abortion. Half the class supported it, half against. And then I used this Wilkie information and presented what abortion did to these unborn children and what an unborn child looks like in its beauty and all its God-given glory. And then I asked for the class again for their opinion, and then it was unanimous for life. So I learned very early at the age of 18 that education was the key to reaching people's hearts. Now, in May, that was 40 years ago, and I'll let your listeners and yourself do the math. My math tells me that I was 32 now, so but you can come to your own conclusion, of course. But the point is that education really has a wallop, a punch, and it's a lot of bang for the buck. When you give people the truth, that empowers them to make decisions. And back in 1970-something, when we were all getting involved in the abortion issue, we did think that once we told people the truth, they would say, oh, this abortion is awful, we must reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, we were mistaken, and we realized that we were in this for the long haul.
Yeah.
And so thus, we bunkered down and decided to get involved and do whatever it took, pacing ourselves, keeping an eye on society and how they responded to our message, keeping in mind that we needed to change it from time to time.
Yes.
And until it's evolved into the organization it is today.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Thinking about that, and we could do a whole show, Brad, on reasons why abortion persists even today, with all the education, all the material that's out there, the evidence is overwhelming, and yet it persists. But we'll perhaps save that for another show. I heard you mention Dr. John Wilkie. He and his wife Barbara played a very important role in your life, didn't they?
Oh, they certainly did. When I got involved in the movement, they were the people that I looked up to. Theirs was the literature and information that I used to do this battle for life.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I became involved on the national level. I was the member of the board of directors for Montana State, Right to Life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I met the Wilkies. And once we bumped into each other and worked together, gradually we saw each other more and more. And eventually, I started working for the National Right to Life Political Action Committee. And I transferred from Montana, my beloved state, which is God's country, to
yes.
Sacramento, California, to work in the Western office.
Yeah.
And there I worked the 13 Western states for the political races, anywhere from the presidential race down to congressional races. And lots of travel when my kids were young. It was a lot of hard work, but it was certainly worth the effort to sow the seeds of pro-life and to begin to build members of Congress that saw the value of life, that would cast pro-life votes. And what we did there was lay the groundwork that we've been building on ever since.
Yeah. Back in those early days, Brad, what kind of traction did your message get with the politicians? I'm just curious because now it, as our listeners know, it's a very, it's almost a litmus test issue today, at least from a media standpoint, of whether or not they're going to support or attack political candidates, but. What kind of reception did the pro-life message get with politicians early on?
Well, early on, Mike, it was all about education. you couldn't get a politician to take the heat on the House or Senate floor when the pro-Bush were giving you all they had.
Yeah.
You had to have somebody who wouldn't wilt under fire, who had that conviction in their soul,
yeah,
and who would do whatever it took to protect those babies. And that only comes from understanding the reality of abortion,
yes,
what it does to the baby, what it does to the mother and the father,
mm,
what it does to the grandparents, aunts and uncles, and those who were involved in the situation.
Yeah.
And all around, it's just death and dying and destruction. And once you can show them the beauty of the unborn child and what abortion does to those babies, then you can see the light bulbs go on, and you can see the conviction in their eyes,
yeah,
as you're talking to them. And once that fire of conviction is lit, it lasts for a lifetime,
yes,
in most cases.
And,
yeah, and that's what we strove to do in the early years, was to light that fire in the hearts and souls of politicians so that they would stand firm. And back then, Congressman Henry Hyde from Illinois was one of the most eloquent speakers, mm, on behalf of unborn children.
Yes. How has the pro-life message changed today when you approach politicians? Has it become easier, or is it just as much a battleground today as it was then?
Well, Mike, I think it's become easier in the sense that science and technology lifts up our message, gives it support, gives it credibility. For instance, the ultrasound machine,
yeah,
that was coming into notoriety and use when our oldest child was born in about 1982. Since then, it's routinely used for pregnancies. And now we have a whole generation, Mike, of people whose first baby picture was taken within the womb.
Yes.
And then you have aunts and uncles, brothers, sisters, mothers, grandfathers, having pictures, ultrasound pictures, with them on their keychains in their cubicles at work.
Yes.
Stuck on the refrigerator. And that has educated tens of millions of people with the reality of the beauty of the unborn child. So now when we talk to politicians, many of them have been exposed to this reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier in some ways to give them the information to stand up for the unborn. On the other hand, I've got to tell you, what we're dealing with is very demonic.
Yes.
And we fight against principalities that are in the heavenly realm.
Yes.
That we need Jesus desperately.
Yes.
As we do that.
Yes.
And as a result, many of them, Satan has gripped their hearts so tightly,
mm-hmm,
that it is almost impossible, save the blood of Christ,
amen,
to pull them from that grip. And so sometimes you share the message, you sow the seeds, but you don't see much fruit.
Well, Brad, here is the million-dollar question, and you've been asked this, no doubt, thousands of times over the years. Do you think we're going to see Roe v. Wade overturned in our lifetimes?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question, Mike. I think so, yes. I'm very optimistic.
Mm.
And my dear, dear friend Jack Wilson often said, and his dear wife Barbara, that they didn't think they'd see Roe versus Wade reversed during their lifetime. But they think, they always thought that it would be in the next generation.
Yeah.
And I believe that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Science and technology is pushing this, the reality of the unborn child. Those who have chosen abortion and regretted it are growing in numbers and voicing their opinions. They have become some of the best ambassadors for the unborn babies that we could possibly ask for.
Yes.
Abortion has left a wake of death and destruction and grieving and pain and sorrow and remorse. And as people pick up the pieces and understand what is done, they're speaking out.
Yes.
So, yes, we have so many young people, Mike, that are joining the pro-life movement. When I got involved, I was one of the few young people involved. Now, we older people are in a minority. When you go to Washington, D.C., march in that march with 100,000 other pro-lifers, that is a life-changing experience.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when I first started going in about 77, there were very few of us young people. But now when we go, two-thirds easily, probably three-quarters, are 25 and under.
Mm.
And it's such an amazing thing to see the joy and enthusiasm and support for life. When the others, the past presidents of NARAL, the radical pro-abortion group, got off the metro in Washington, D.C., the day of the march to go to her office, she was surrounded with enthusiastic, happy kids.
Yeah.
And she was quoted in her office later saying, there's so many of them, and they're so young. And she just kept repeating that. And not long after that, she retired to make room for the younger pro-abortion people, which really hasn't materialized. So, yes, we're seeing a lot of good indication. Public support is coming to our favor. The next generation is much more pro-life than the generation before them. So I think we have good reason to be optimistic.
I'm very encouraged by that answer, Brad. I certainly hope you and I, I'm not going to give away anything, but I'll just say that Brad and I are the same age, so they can figure that out. So I'm encouraged to hear you say that you believe that we'll see that. I know our listeners and many of the folks that support you and Life Issues Institute and Facing Life Head On TV program are praying to that end, that God would move and put an end to this. So
we absolutely are.
Yeah, before we move on, because we do want to tackle some tough issues going on in America today. But I would like for you to tell our listeners about the Life Issues Institute first, and then Facing Life Head On television show. If you'd fill them in on what that is all about, what they might find at those websites.
Sure. Mike, in 1991, Dr. Wilkie was president of National Right to Life, and he was growing increasingly concerned that there was less and less attention given to pro-life education, which is the foundation on which you build political and legislative pro-life victories. So I was working for the PAC, Political Action Committee in Washington, in Sacramento, California, when he called me there and said, I'm starting the Life Issues Institute. We're going to concentrate on education. Would you like to join me? And I called him back in about 2 hours, and I said, yes.
That didn't take long at all.
No. My big concern was is that I had held him up on this pedestal for so long, working with him day to day, would he ever get knocked off? And you know, Mike, he never did. In 24 years, he never fell off that pedestal in my eyes. And he just became more dear to me and more of a mentor to me. So as we strove to work for education, we also took the position that we weren't territorial. And that we wanted to promote other pro-life organizations when we saw that they were doing good work.
Very wise.
And we promoted an attitude of work with everybody, and together we can do this. And we think we've been very successful in these years in accomplishing much of that. You know, it's quite different, the tenor of the movement, than it was back in 99 when we started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's very wise. Now, I know I've been out to the website recently in prepping for this interview, and I was encouraged by all the resources that are out there, the different articles, the blog, and information for folks seeking pro-life materials, really how they can defend the pro-life position. That was a pleasant surprise, Brad.
Well, you know, we have four websites that speak to different segments of society. And back in the early days, we used to send out packets of material every day. There was a mountain on on the table in the office that would be mailed, and now everything is instantaneously accessible by a click of the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And we have hundreds of thousands of people that visit our websites every month,
mm-hmm.
From around the world. So this technology has been immensely helpful,
yeah.
in getting the pro-life message not only around the country, but to other corners of the world that wouldn't have it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
We have one website that reaches out to men in abortion. I personally counsel men after abortion to help them through the emotion. We have a website dedicated to reaching the black community.
Mm-hmm.
We've done research to show very solidly that 79% of Planned Parenthood surgical abortion mills are located in black or Hispanic neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And we created a map for each one of the Planned Parenthood abortion mills and use census tract data to map which census tracts were predominantly black or Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at these maps within a couple seconds, you realize just how much Planned Parenthood is targeting women of color and making blood money off of them.
Yeah. Is that information, are those facts, are they gaining any traction in the black and Hispanic communities, Brad?
Oh, absolutely. As we hired the first person to represent us in the black community, and it took me 14 months to find him, but we thought it was very important to have the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And we have worked with other black pro-life coalition members, such as Alveda King,
yes.
the niece of Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And they have made marvelous gains,
mm-hmm.
in reaching the black community about the reality,
yes.
of abortion targeting their community.
Mm-hmm.
The statistics from the government are so clear and so profound and so evident that the abortion industry targets them, that there's no way Planned Parenthood can argue its case out of that.
Yeah.
And when we sit down with a pastor, a black pastor, and tell him that his community is being targeted, there's a lot of anger. And so then we have to channel that anger into constructive efforts,
yes.
to alert the black community to counter what Planned Parenthood is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I heard you mention, Brad, that you do some counseling yourself. I'd like to follow that idea. Abortion does, in fact, have some long-term effects for the woman who undergoes it, as well as the father of the baby. Would you be able to discuss some of those from research and statistics that you're aware of, and maybe from your personal conversations with women and men who have experienced the after effects?
Absolutely. And Mike, a lot of people ask me why this issue is so important to me. Have I ever experienced abortion? And I say, tell them no. But I did receive a letter one day from the brother of a young man who committed suicide because his girlfriend aborted the baby that they conceived together. And his mother found him hanging from the rafters in the garage when she went to work that morning. And that is such an awful reminder that I promised God that I would do whatever I could to help heal men after abortion so that they wouldn't find themselves at the end of a rope like that.
Yeah.
And men are programmed by our Creator to provide and protect,
yes.
our offspring and our mates,
mm-hmm.
our families. That is very much ingrained in our psyche. And when there's an abortion, it creates a total upheaval and seriously damages his psyche in relation to that.
Yeah.
Those who have pioneered counseling for men early coined the term hooking.
Mm.
And that's when a man sees, hears, touches, smells, or otherwise experiences something that reminds him of that abortion experience, and he just goes crazy with anger.
Yeah.
And he nor his victims surrounding him will understand where that anger is coming from, but it's coming from the fact that he was unable or pushed for the abortion of his unborn child, didn't play God's role that God had intended for him to protect his offspring, but often pushed for the abortion, sometimes coercing or forcing his girlfriend or wife to have that abortion. Others tried to stop the abortion but couldn't, and some of those suffer most psychologically. So we have to take men through this process, helping them separate the healthy guilt from the unhealthy guilt that they're putting on their own shoulders, walking them through that, helping them grieve the loss of their child, making the child real to them, and mourning for that child as they would, say, a toddler that wandered into the swimming pool and drowned. This is a real life. And once they go through that process, Mike, you just wouldn't believe what you see, a change in the men before you. One time I counseled a man who came into my office every evening, once a week after everybody was leaving. And the secretary mentioned that when he first came in, he was downcast and never smiled. But when he left for the last time, he was a new creation in Christ.
Amen.
And he looked her straight in the eye. He was happy. He was joking and quite different from when he first came in. And that's not me. That's the Holy Spirit. And that is why it's such a joy and honor to be involved with helping men after abortion. It's just an amazing experience.
Yes. Wow. Brad, the Center for Medical Progress has been releasing a series of videos. I'm sure all of our listeners are very familiar. You'd have to be out of the country and completely disconnected from any kind of media not to know the backlash and the outrage and the uproar that has resulted from viewing these videos. They're very candid conversations from members of Planned Parenthood and other organizations that do business with Planned Parenthood. What exactly has Life Issues Institute done to address these? Because I imagine that you really had to ramp up in a hurry because you probably got bombarded with all kinds of communication.
Indeed. This has kept us busy, to say the least, Mike.
I bet.
This morning, for instance, as one of the videos was released, I was up very early before my eyes were open with a cup of coffee and going to Twitter and watching the video and then, of course, posting and then writing and communicating to get out to everybody we could. Social networks have been very successful in helping us spread the word. The first video, of course, went viral in an amazing capacity. And since then, of course, it's dropped a little each time. But what we have to do as the Institute and as brothers and sisters in Christ, we need to keep this issue alive.
Yes.
And we need to make sure that everybody on the planet understands the grisly brutality of the abortion industry.
Yes.
The fact that they're not only killing innocent unborn babies, then they're dissecting them and selling off the parts for money.
Yes.
It's blood money. Every time you turn around, they're doing something to make money, and it's not for the women. They're not pro-women. They are there for the dollars and cents. And abortion is a cash cow for them in the industry, which pulls in about $500 million a year.
Wow. Yeah. That's one of the strategies that the abortion industry has utilized to cloak themselves, really to hide themselves and try to justify and excuse, is that it's about women's right and women's reproductive health. That is oxymoronic if there ever was something.
Well, as I communicated with Cecile Richards today on Twitter, I said, abortion isn't health care, it's killing.
Yes.
And we will stop you. We will get you defunded, and we will not rest until we have.
Yeah.
And, Mike, let me tell you, if we can stop the $500 million going to Planned Parenthood every year from our tax dollars, we can bankrupt them, or we can seriously curtail their efforts of their pro-death agenda. And if we can take Planned Parenthood out of the picture of this abortion battle and debate, we will win the the battle of abortion much sooner than we would otherwise.
Yes, yeah, and I agree with that, Brad. And I also see beyond Planned Parenthood, I think it's fair to say that that these Planned Parenthood videos, the revelation of what we're hearing and seeing, it's really symptomatic of a larger problem, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I referred to the demonic aspect.
Yes.
The spiritual warfare
mm-hmm.
that we're battling. Just stop to think of what happened back in the early 1940s during World War II, mm-hmm. when in all of the concentration camps. I went back to Auschwitz a few years ago and toured that place, and you really realize when you smell and touch and see where mm-hmm. millions of people were killed, just the demonic effects that had to be in place to make men show such brutal brutality and violence to other men and women. And now we're in the same boat. We're talking 57 million babies that have mm-hmm. been killed on the altar of choice.
Yes.
That's got to be Satan affecting people, motivating them to kill those children.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike, it's hard to put your mind around what does 57 million lives mean? What does it
That's
equal?
Right. Yeah.
And it would equal a little more than the entire populations of California and New York combined.
Mm.
And just imagine being without those people all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But that's the carnage and the effect that abortion has had on America.
Mm. Yeah. Brad, what advice do you give to pastors when you have an opportunity to talk to them and other Christians who are involved actively in the pro-life movement? What advice do you give them about the role that the local church must play in the pro-life movement?
Well, Mike, I firmly believe, and my colleagues in the movement agree, that if the church, every church, would be active and involved in this issue, abortion would already be ended. We need to hear from every pulpit of every church, of every denomination, that abortion is killing. It's one of Satan's most effective tools to drag souls to hell that exists today. And if we have them saying that, plus then it's equally important for them to reach out with open arms to their congregation and saying to them, if you have been involved in an abortion experience, there is hope and healing through Christ, through his blood on the cross.
Yes.
Because if we don't speak about abortion from the pulpits, you know what's happening, Mike, is that these people, they're coming to us. We know how they're interpreting that.
Yeah.
They're coming to the conclusion that if the pastor doesn't talk about the forgiveness of abortion,
mm-hmm.
then it's a sin too grievous for the blood of the cross, and there is no forgiveness.
Yeah.
And so that's why if the pastor could speak out and say, here is where you'll find forgiveness, here is where you'll find love, here is where you'll find hope and healing from your abortion,
mm-hmm.
just imagine the ministry that could be taken with all of the people throughout the United States that are sitting in the pews and quietly hurting from abortion.
Yes. And I have a personal illustration example, Brad, of what you just said and the truth of that. My fellowship, several of us, a dozen or so, went to Columbus, Bexley, actually, East Columbus, a couple of weekends ago during the nationwide protest against Planned Parenthood. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I want to say there were 320 cities in which protests happened, spread in 49 states. Does that sound accurate, Brad?
Approximately, yes, that's true.
Okay, and so we were in Bexley. Now, one of the ladies that went with us had an abortion when she was 16 years old, and she experienced that very thing, Brad, where she was afraid to speak up and say anything about it. Until about 3 years ago, God gave her the courage and gave her the understanding that she could really be helpful to people who have experienced this. And she began to tell her story and has been invited several places now to speak and has always been an encouragement. And so during this protest, she was holding a sign that said, "I regret my abortion." And the local CBS affiliate showed up to tape, and the reporter saw that sign, and he said, "I want to interview you." And so she got to tell her story to Columbus's biggest television station, and they broadcast it that day on the 6 o'clock news. So, pastors, if you're listening to this, speak about life. Speak about the sanctity of life. Speak about the importance of a Christian theistic worldview that values life, especially unborn life, and then offer counseling, assistance, encouragement to people who may have experienced the tragedy of abortion, and offer forgiveness and mercy and encouragement and love. So thank you for bringing that up, Brad.
Well, and I'd just like to add one sure. brief thing, is that silence is a tool of Satan in
yes.
this area.
Yes.
And he wants pastors to remain quiet, and he wants people who have had abortions, such as this woman, to remain quiet. Mm-hmm. But if we don't, if we speak up, if we shine a light on this, that's where we can get the upper hand on abortion.
That's right. And it's never too late to get involved in the pro-life movement. To get involved in opposing Planned Parenthood. Do you have any recommendations for our listeners, Brad, about how they can get involved right where they're at?
Well, certainly. On our website, we have a one-stop place to help you react to these Planned Parenthood videos. And if you go to lifeissues.org, click on Issues, you'll see the Planned Parenthood videos, and in one spot you have everything you need. There are there's a list of things you can do, with ideas on groups that you can affiliate with in your community. There are the videos that you can watch in their entirety or the abbreviated versions. There are addresses where you can contact, reach out, and email your local state representatives and your members of Congress and the House and Senate.
Excellent.
And right now, Mike, it's really important that members of the House of Representatives in D.C. hear from us about how we want them to stop funding a Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
So at that place on our website, you can find a myriad of things that you can do to respond to this.
Excellent. So I think that might help our listeners that are contemplating, okay, what can I do? How can I start to have conversations with family members, with friends, with neighbors, with coworkers about not just the Planned Parenthood human baby parts trafficking, but about the pro-life message? And that would be a good place to go, I think, for conversation starters, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Mike, what I've done lately is I ask people on planes and wherever, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The reactions you get when you bring up abortion, especially if it's in a confined place where they can't run away from you.
Right.
But you say, have you seen the Planned Parenthood videos?
Mm.
And regardless of their answer, you can get into that discussion.
That's true.
And then it's important to talk about the beauty of the unborn child and what abortion does to that and what abortion does to the parents.
Yeah.
So that you present a message of love them both.
Mm,
and when
yes.
you approach yeah. this with love expressed toward not only the babies but the parents involved, then that's a winning combination. And you're seen as a person who has a message that they want to learn more about and talk to you about that. So that opens up plenty of doors.
Perfect. You know, one of the misperceptions is that the pro-life movement focuses on abortion exclusively. And that's just not true. There are other things that are going on in our culture. State governments, for sure, are starting to adopt laws legalizing assisted suicide and euthanasia, as it's called, alternatively. What should pro-life advocates know about these issues, and how can we effectively speak out against them?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because euthanasia is an issue that's very much a part of society today, and it's trying to get into society more and more. I'm blessed to serve as chairman of the board of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network. Those who remember Terry Schiavo, her family has developed this foundation, which then I work with Terry's family, Bobby Schindler, Mary Schindler, and we work to reach out and help patients who are in the same situation as Terry to provide legal help, to provide medical help, to provide moral support, to provide spiritual support. And that's an issue that we as pro-lifers need to spend more time with to become more knowledgeable about. And one of the ways in which you can do that is to go to terriesnetwork.org and find out more about that. But today, for instance, back in January, Mike, Belgium legalized euthanasia for children of any age. Now, I was talking to some friends recently, and I was bemoaning the fact that this happened, and I was worried about it coming to the United States. And they ridiculed me for being a radical thinker, of course. And lo and behold, last week in the state of Colorado, proponents of euthanasia are working to put on the ballot an initiative to the Constitution there that would legalize physician-assisted suicide. Now, the thing that worries me most, Mike, is that it's so vaguely worded and broadly worded that it means they will be able to euthanize people who are mentally incompetent.
Oh, boy.
So people with Down syndrome, those with Alzheimer's, can be offed without their permission. And this, Mike, includes children.
Oh, boy.
So we could see children being euthanized. If there's any challenge to them physically when they're born, they could just off them then and there so they don't have to worry about it. In Belgium, from the time they legalized euthanasia until the time it took for them to get to the children was only 12 years.
Oh, my.
So this is something we need to be aware of because assisted suicide, euthanasia, has been legalized in some of the states in our nation, and it's a quiet, demonic thing that is sneaking up on society, and we need to be aware of it. We need to understand how our loved ones in the hospital could be affected by this. So I would encourage people to go to lifeissues.org or terriesfight.org and learn more of what they can do to stop this.
Yes. Yeah, so many folks, I've heard the same thing, Brad, say, well, that's there, that can't happen here. Well, it can and it is in a good many places. So are there any new projects that you're working on you'd like to let our listeners know about?
Well, yes, there is. We are working on a new project with videos. One of the things the Wilkies taught me was that you have to change with the times. You have to change your teaching techniques with what American people are needing and wanting to interact with. And we've realized by posting our TV programs that are a half hour in length on YouTube that not many people are staying for the entire program. So instead of Facing Life Head On, which is our half hour TV program, we're developing something called Facing Life Now, in which we're going to show brief videos that will compact the information that would be in a TV show down to a few minutes. And it's amazing what you can get in that time frame if you're very careful about what you're saying. So then we'll take these and we'll promote them on the internet and work to get them to go viral. So imagine a message telling young women from a woman who's been there that you can reverse the chemical abortion pill RU486 if you change your mind about killing your unborn child. We have one of those that we've done production on where she's looking straight into the camera and speaking to another young woman about she has choices and she has options. And then we share the resources, the website, the 800 number that they can call and get help from. So we think that for today's young people, in the environment online that they use, the environment that they're used to using, that they trust and believe in, we need to present a pro-life message, and that's what we're going to be working on doing in the months and year ahead.
Yes, yes, very, very encouraging. I think that's a brilliant strategy, actually. I know that you're on Twitter, Brad, because I follow you and retweet your tweets, as they say. That's at Brad Mattes, M-A-T-T-E-S. How about on Facebook? You have a presence there?
Yes, we do. But Life Issues Institute is probably the best place to go.
Okay.
I have a Facebook page, but I just don't have the time to get there as often as I should.
Yeah.
So Life Issues Institute is the Facebook page to go to. You know, I love Twitter. It's brief, short messages
yes.
to get a lot across, and that suits me very well, and it helps me to get the information I need.
Yeah.
So, you know, the neat thing is, Mike, there's so many different kinds of social networking out there
yeah.
that you can pick what suits you best and really stay an informed individual and a citizen, a voter in America, and go to the voting booth with confidence that you're making the right choice.
That's right. Friends, you can go to the website, lifeissues.org, for all of the resources that Brad has mentioned. And become equipped. Share them with your friends and your family and your coworkers who are looking for answers and resources on how they can represent the pro-life message well. You can also find Brad on Facing Life Head On. Now, the website for that is facinglife.tv, and I know that you're on several networks, including TBN and some others, so check out your local listings for that. Anything else you'd like to share with us, Brad?
Well, just to let you know, yesterday we kicked off a new website for the TV program, so facinglife.tv. There's some wonderful technology that you can take advantage of, click into resources that give you additional information, and it's just a wonderful place that you can share with others to help persuade them to be pro-life without hitting them over the head. We give a gentle, loving message. And it's a great tool you can use to persuade others to be pro-life.
Yes. Amen. Brad, thank you for everything that you do and for the life that you've devoted for this cause. It's very encouraging to myself and many others. God bless you, and thank you for being on Soaring Eagle Radio.
Well, thank you, Mike. I've really enjoyed being with you today.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and of course follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. You can visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.